Hello and welcome again to Planet Product Owner. This is your host, Scott. You know, this podcast has really been successful, more successful than I ever thought it would be. It started out as a test just to see if I could get some interest out here, if I could help some people maybe, and if folks really wanted to hear what I had to say or, you know, how I could help them with thinking patterns and the like. It's not your average format, like, you know, interview format style that I find out there in the marketplace is, you know, sometimes it's helpful, but a lot of times they talk about one and done things and how successful they were or unsuccessful they were in a given project or in a given initiative. And those are not the things that are necessarily going to sustain this community. It's not going to teach you how to think, right? And so that's why I really stick to the thinking patterns and the art of what we call agile, making this work breakdown come to life really as a product owner. And so the success of this is really, I owe it all to you. So the listeners and the followers, you've put Planet Product Owner Podcast in the top 10% of podcasts globally, 69 countries, right? I mean, we've done this together as a team. I've not marketed this very much at all. You can search for it. You won't really find a whole lot other than the shares and the comments and the feedback that you give online. Some of the metrics that were shared with me leads me to believe that you're not keeping it to yourself. There's a growing number of shares via text, WhatsApp, social media. You know, those are the things that are what's driving the momentum. And so that really tells me that, yeah, this is a collaborative community and that's where we want to be. So with all of that, I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for your listenership, your support. It tells me a lot of folks want the help and need the help, and you've got similar questions, and hopefully I've been able to give you some good thinking patterns and answers to those questions. You're willing to help others by sharing as well, and sharing is caring. Remember, we've said that here. So, as you know, moving on to the second housekeeping item for the day before we get into today's episode, here at Planet Product Owner, I don't bore you with the ads. I hate ads. I don't like commercials, you know, anything like that. I've been asked for, you know, sponsorships and things like that from large scale to medium scale, whatever. And I don't really need this sponsorship, okay? That's why I've got my Venmo out there. If you feel led to give, that's great. If it's valuable to you, that's fantastic. If not, hey, still love you. But I hate the commercials, right? So there's one thing, though, that I'm very open to. And I'm open to helping our community get help from the community. And so today, I am happy to announce that I have this listener who wanted me to talk a little bit about their endeavor here. It's called Jest Coffee, J-E-S-T, Coffee Tea. JestCoffeeTea.com is where you can go to find some great products. If you're not a coffee person like most of us probably are, you're probably a tea person. There's some great stuff out there. What I want you to do is go to JestCoffeeTea.com. That's J-E-S-T, Coffee T-E-A. .com. Use the promo code PRODUCTPO, that's PRODUCTPO, all one word, and they're going to give you a 15% off flat of your order. Get some Christmas holiday swag, including my favorite. They sent me some Bali Blue coffee, and it was amazingly rich taste. We love coffee, we love tea, and all of that. If you're a tea fan, even if you're not, it's going to make a great gift idea, and if you go ahead and go to JestCoffeeTea.com, remember to use the promo code PRODUCTPO for or product PO for 15% flat off today. All right, so thanks again for the coffee. It was great. I can't wait to get into the next bag. All right, so let's get into today's topic, shall we? We're rounding out the end of the year, and throughout this journey, I've had so much listener feedback, questions, debates, comments, gratitude, thanks. And even those few who have said, you know what, this is the most worthless thing I've ever listened to in my life. I got through the couple of housekeeping tidbits and didn't really get into the deep stuff. And I encouraged them to go back and listen to that for a specific question or topic. And we've turned them around. So now they're listeners. So I want to end this season 4. Can you believe that? For those of you who have been with me since the beginning, we started this towards the end of 2019. You know, of course, we had the big pandemic breakout. And so things were kind of hit and miss. But anyways, I'm kind of getting off topic here. What I want to cover today is Scott's top 10 things that a product owner's got to do to be successful. Now, when I get into these, I'm going to try to break these down in groups of maybe 5. So I'll have probably 2 segments and then a wrap-up segment following this one. But there's 10 things really. And because somebody's asked me, you know, what's the biggest thing that we can do as a product owner to be successful? And a lot of times it really depends on your environment. It depends on your nature and kind of what your domain looks like, kind of how you're aligned and where you're set up, because everybody has their own rules, right? On how they set up your team or your role even, you know, as it relates to a product owner. But I think there are some non-negotiable things that are going to help you out here. And again, you're not going to find this in a book ever. You know that. So today I want to jump into Scott's top 10 things that a product owner must be doing to be successful. And yeah, I'm going to build the content. I'm going to develop more content because I've set a goal to do at least 2 episodes a month to help you out and dive into some deeper topics. And I know that makes all of us happy going into 2023, into season 5 of Planet Product Owner, which is nuts. So buckle up, sit back, and let's get to Planet Product Owner. So I'm going to jump in this segment. On the top 10, I think I'm going to start with number 10, and I'm going to work my way down to number 1. And while some of these you may agree or disagree that they're in the right order of the top 10 list, that's fine, because sometimes these toggle and shift for me depending on where I'm at, too. So let's jump right in here. Number 10, focus on the majors and pay attention to the minors. But focus on those majors. The majors are going to provide you some strategic coaching opportunities, a lot of times with things that the team can't control, while the minors allow for tactical coaching in some ways and also allow for you to maybe work on things that are out of your control or out of the team's control. So the majors, what do you mean, Scott? Well, is your work visible? Is your work demonstrable? Are you showing your work? Are you following the pillars here of the empirical way of thinking of being transparent? You're inspecting your work and you're adapting and you have some actions behind that. Those are the major things, right? What about a team member who's not talking, or you're not talking, or maybe they're talking too much? Yeah, maybe that is a sign of something that we need to address and focus on, because that's all in the spirit of this openness, respect, courage, focus, all those things that we talk about as far as some values that we like to see out of the teams. You know, the majors are things that we can control. That's what we're really trying to get to here, the things that we can control. In a lot of cases, those are the majors that we want to really focus on. But the minors, you know, for example, I mean, you got a dev team member who's late one time to a ceremony or an event, you know, the type of candy that's out on the table, or the fact that they didn't cross a T or dot an I in some kind of story detail that they were working on, right? What about even if the environment is down for one of your demos and nobody thought, hey, wait a minute, y'all stay out of the environment while we give this thing a demo? Well, you can't always control some of those environmental things, right? So that's what I consider to be a minor. But again, it leads to, if you're paying some attention to it, you're able to make sure that you can put some kind of plan in place to help those things, right? But here's the thing. The majors are really going back to what we talk about in the Scrum Guide and what we read, that, you know, the transparency factor here. You know, are we visible with our work? Are we transparent with what it is that we're trying to do? And are we inspecting that? And then are we adapting? You know, those are the things that we want to make sure that we're really focusing on. Those are the majors for sure. So the number 9 on the list, out of the top 10 list here, the team goal is to make you happy, product owner. I know this sounds a little bit holier than thou when I say it this way, but even though you're a working team member of that team, your goal is to make your customers happy. So you kind of drive that, right? If the team is making you happy, then you're making the customer happy. In turn, they are making the customer happy. Now everybody's happy. We're a big happy family, right? So when you think in terms of how do I help the team understand that they want to make me happy? Well, setting some kind of clear leadership expectations down to begin with really helps you a lot. But going back to a previous episode, sharing in the win and sharing in the metrics and in the feedback with the team to show them what needles they're moving with that work, you know, when you go to sell that, and I'm not trying to give away the farm here yet, because closer to the top of this list, I'll get into this a little bit more. But if we can get the impression going, if we can get the collaboration going, if we can get the teamwork going in a way that the dev team understands that You know, they really want to try to make you happy with what they're doing because you are an extension of the customer, and in turn, they are making the customer happy. You got to be that middle person, though. You got to be in between it. We talked about that balance beam. So that's number 9. Number 8, get the affirmative. This is really important. If you want to be a successful product owner, when something is proposed through collaboration, when somebody comes up with the idea, you come up with the idea, you know, whatever it is, and we get some kind of agreement on that, make sure everybody buys in and they agree to it. So, you know, the question is always, I think I heard you say that you like this idea, or I think what I'm getting from this conversation is that we're all in, we're buying in, right? So get the affirmative, make sure you're doing that. Because if you don't get the affirmative, you're giving somebody the chance to get off the hook and go change their mind about it. You just got out of a very productive, valuable, collaborative session to talk about something really, really big, solve a problem or capture an opportunity. Everybody was on the same page. You've got to make sure that you're verbally making that happen to get the affirmative. And it doesn't matter how frequently you have to do that, you know, in any of your work sessions or any of your discoveries that you're doing. So number 7, again, going back to things that successful product owners do, compromise when you can, but always look for the lesson at the end. The question, what did we learn from this, is one of the most important things that you can ever ask. You know, I have learned this over the course of time. What did I learn from that? What did we as a team learn from this? When you compromise, you can compromise anytime, right? And you need to compromise because that helps you get the win-win going, right? And that's what you want. You want to make sure that we're solving the problem all the way around, not just for your agenda, their agenda, or his agenda. We want to make sure that we're solving it, right? And so always look for the lesson at the end. And when I ask, what did we learn from this? And that being one of the most important things that we can ask, I always look back and think, I could have set this up a little bit differently in this area. How could I have presented this specific topic a little bit differently so that it was maybe adopted a little earlier? Or maybe it was a little more clear on what I was trying to explain to them because I think at a different level than they do. And it doesn't make anybody a bad person. It just means that not everybody has the same intimate knowledge, right? Of what we're trying to get to, and we got to bring people along sometimes and not push them or pull them or drag them. Okay, so that's number 7. Compromise when you can, but always look for the lesson at the end. So that's 7 through 10 right now. I'm going to take a break here. I'm going to come back with maybe 6 through 3. We'll shoot for that in the next segment. Stick around. So, we've talked about number 10, focus on the majors, not the minors, but pay attention to those minors. Number 9, the team goal is to make you happy because you're an extension of the customer. Number 8, get the affirmative. Get the affirmative. We want to make sure we got the buy-in and within the agreement on what we're solving for. Number 7, look to compromise when you can, but always look for the lesson at the end. Ask, what did we learn from that? And that's one of the most important things that you can ask. So, let's jump into number 6. Don't make excuses for things that you can control. You know, we're in the business of exploring, discovering, and solving the unknown. I hear a lot of product owners a lot of times saying, well, we just had so many unknowns that we weren't able to fill in the blank, right? Guys, if you're a product owner, you got to find a way to win. You know, when we in the product owner community say we just had so many unknowns, we had too many unknowns, I'm going to tell you what it tells to me. And look, you know I'm your friend. I'm going to be brutally honest with you, right? All that does is prove that your collaboration sucks. Sorry, I said it, but that's true. You know, when we acknowledge that we had too many unknowns, then what we're saying is that we prefer to be baby birds in the nest with our mouths open so that mama bird can drop all the worms down in there, right? We don't have to go work for anything. We can't operate like that because that's not an agile mindset. That is not an iterative, incremental, whatever. That is not where we are. That's not the kind of environment we work in. We have too many unknowns all the time. We have to go out and discover those and define those. So just because we have unknowns out there, that's something that we can control. because we have a method of going out there and reaching out to people. You know, if we're being transparent, if we're inspecting our work, if we're adapting, if we're moving forward to go out here and find out what we have, look, our purpose is not to deliver this just by some indefinite timeline, right? Otherwise, we would go hire a project manager to come out here and look at all of our milestones and deliverables for us. We don't have that. What we do have is a team of folks out here who can go out and find the answers that they need. And a lot of these things you can control. So don't make excuses for those things. Sorry, I had to jump on my high horse there, but it's the truth. You got to find a way to win, okay? Find a way to win. Because the easy way out is to say we had too many unknowns. That's not going to separate you in the market as being the best product owner, most marketable product owner. It's not going to separate you from the rest of the crowd who follow kind of that same pattern, right? If you want to be the one out there leading the market, getting out here delivering the stuff, staying true to what it is that we're trying to do in these guiding principles, you're going to find a way to win, okay? All right, now that one's over. Number five, sorry guys. Building relationships with people is a safety net in a glass case. When something goes wrong, your good relationship's going to save the day. So I want you to think about that when you're working in your share care time with your folks. You know, it's okay to understand if your main stakeholder goes camping on the weekends, loves to work in the yard, and has a big tree that they're cutting down in their yard, and they may have broken their ankle last week, or they need a new chainsaw blade. You know, whatever the case is, it doesn't matter. Building relationships with people is your safety net, because your relationship, your good relationship with your stakeholders, is what's going to save you when something goes wrong that may or may not be in your control. Okay, so when something goes wrong, and look, you can look at those, you can look at situations all the time about when something goes wrong, right? You had a release that maybe didn't live up to the expectations that it would from a performance standpoint, or maybe it was some kind of mishap in the code. Maybe they didn't get the right package out there or whatever, okay? And we said we were going to do this, but it didn't happen the way that we expected it to. If you have a really strong relationship and a really good relationship that you're building with your stakeholders, they can swoop in and help you with these things. And they're going to feel good about doing it because, you know why? If you're building the right relationship with your stakeholder, they know that you are in their corner and they are not going to run from that. They're going to stay in your corner because they know that you're spending your valuable time getting to know them, building their trust, finding out what it is that they want, and delivering that. And you're routinely delivering it, but when something does go wrong, you want somebody in your corner. So build those relationships with your people, okay? Number four, this next one, now I'm not going to say the word that I would say here, like publicly, but privately I would tell you it doesn't really have a really nice word here. But don't defend crummy work. Okay, so if you want to be a successful product owner, you can't defend sloppy work. Now, I didn't say incomplete work, all right, or not everything that we wanted, or just the good and not the better or the best. I'm talking about the quality and the value of the work. Don't defend crappy work, because at the end, it's your job to optimize, you know, what we're doing here, the value and the quality. So if you're going to be the one who's on the hook, really, for ensuring that the team is delivering this value, you know, you're optimizing the work's coming out of there. Well, if it's crummy work, then you're justifying that or you're defending it, then guess what you're doing? You're telling the world, I'm the person here who's accepting this crummy work. Well, you don't want to be that, okay? So I bet you can think back to a time. Because it's happened to everybody, you know, and again, I mean, these are things that I've learned over the past 20-something years of doing this work. When you defend this code and this work that's really sloppy and really shoddy, it's a reflection on you. And, you know, you don't want to be in that role. That's not your job. Your job is not to accept crappy work. It's to optimize the value of the work that's being produced by the team. All right, enough on that one. Let's go to number three, and then we'll close this segment for just, I think. All right, number three. You've heard me say this. We're on the journey. Keep your front porch clean. If you give somebody a reason to call foul, they're going to. If you give somebody a reason to point back and say, well, I heard the product owner say, that's not good, right? Or, well, shouldn't your product owner have already known that? Shouldn't your team have already known this? Shouldn't your developer, shouldn't your scrum master have already known about this block, this obstacle that's in your way? Shouldn't you have already had these backlog stories elaborated? Shouldn't you have already understood the metrics that are associated with this feature and why we're doing the work? Ew. We don't want to be in that. I'll give you another one. Well, and maybe it goes into number two here a little bit, but I'll give you another one. You're going to a platform meeting or some kind of, you know, higher level value stream or channel meeting or something, and you're going in there to make sure that prioritization is right, and you're looking at a feature that you've never seen before, and it's already made its way all the way over for you to get ready to commit to it, and you haven't seen it yet, and it should be kind of part of your domain. Ew, right? What about asking questions without doing your homework? That is like a big no-no to me, you know? Go out and do your homework. Go out and find as many answers as you can. Then take up the time of your highly paid system architect, you know? Don't bring stuff to them that, you know, that you can go and find out yourself, right? Because you get yourself into a trap that way. All right, so keep your front porch clean. Anticipate the objections, anticipate the questions, anticipate what the other team members are going to ask you about, anticipate what the stakeholders or sponsors are going to ask you about. What is it that they want to see every week from you or every 2 weeks in your demo? What is it that you really should be emphasizing in your demo? And that's going to be part of number two here. But part of keeping your front porch clean is making sure that you don't give anybody a reason to say, hey, this product owner is really slacking, right? All right. So let's get to number two. And I'm going to go ahead and go forward with number two here. And again, things that successful product owners should be doing. Number two, be prepared and be transparent. There is nothing worse than waiting until demo day to kind of explain or to push off and say, well, we've got the wrong thing here, or we don't have anything to show you today. You can't wait until demo day or sprint review day. I mean, that just shouldn't happen, right? I mean, you got to have that work ready, and you got to have it ready to demo, because I've told you before in the podcast, and you'll get this, I'm sure, I'm hoping you're already getting this and you're implementing this practice. If you wait until demo day, and that's the day that you're seeing the work for the first time, you're too late. You're way too late. You're way behind, all right? If you don't have anything to show at the end of that sprint, then the way you work around that is, because the only reason that's going to happen, there's only going to be two reasons why, right? Is one, that you had a blocker that you couldn't move and you had everything tied to it, right? Or two, your sprint goal was no longer valid and y'all just wiped out all of the work from the sprint backlog to bring nothing else in to replace it with, right? So you got to be prepared. You got to be transparent. If it's not going the way that it is, the way that I have offered and suggested to you guys to fix that is to set up your share care time with your primary stakeholder. Do that weekly. Make sure you're holding those work sessions. Treat it like a stand-up. What we did since the last time we met, what we're planning to do between now and then, the next time we meet, and here are the things in the way. So your stakeholders should already know this stuff, right? Okay. All right. I'm going to go to the next segment for the last one, the number one thing, and I'll do a quick review just to make sure we're all on the same page here. Hope you're enjoying this one. This is a little weird for me. Part of that is because I don't get the feedback back immediately. I'm just kind of talking in my closet here, but hey, it's cool. We'll get to the next segment. Hang tight. So two things real quick before we get to the number one thing that as a product owner you got to do to be successful. And this is really the big one. I mean, a lot of these things are just your normal stuff. You've probably already learned a lot of this from me anyway over the course of the four seasons of Planet Product Owner. A couple things real quick, though. One is this. I feel like anybody can be successful doing anything they want to do as long as they're first asking questions. They're second, they're committed to learning about it. And third, you got to follow up. So if you're committed to learning about it and you're asking questions and you're committed to following up, I think you can be successful in anything you really want to do. I really believe that. I've seen it time and time again. You know, it doesn't take, you know, a rocket scientist, even though I really admire and respect rocket scientists. I missed my calling on that, by the way. That's what I really wanted to be when I grew up, by the way, that or a Walmart greeter. I couldn't make up my mind. But anyway, the point is that if you want to learn it and you go in there and apply yourself and then you ask questions and then finally you follow up, I think you can be successful doing anything. I really do, especially in this business. So the second thing is, going back to this number one thing that I think a product owner has to do in order to be successful, before I get to it, you've heard me talk a little bit about this before in a previous episode. Well, I'll just come out with it here. Number one thing is sell your team. Okay. I really think that's imperative. I to be a successful product owner, you're not going to do it by yourself. Without your vision, without your leadership, without your dedication to the customer, without you being on the balance beam between business and technology all the time, without all of that, your team really has no value, right? I mean, they could sure work on some system stuff, but how many customers are you making a happy with an as a developer story? I'm not going there. The point is that without their work, you have no job. Without you casting the vision, they're just working on the system, right? They're doing their upgrades, their optimization, stabilization, remediation, whatever those buckets of work are. So you have to sell your vision. You have to get your team to buy in. And you have to do these other things that we talked about in today's episode. But the main thing is you got to sell your team. You got to give them the win. And when you get into a demo, really, really emphasize to the stakeholders and to the team. It's to the benefit of the team, too, that you're giving them credit where credit is due. Now, you're not going to be able to sell your team, and this is some of the things that goes into this, some of the elements here and factors. You're not going to be able to sell your team without a pretty solid definition of done. You're not going to be able to sell your team without a pretty solid set of working agreements or some kind of ground rules or housekeeping rules, you know, like the Monopoly thing I refer to a lot. You're not going to be able to sell your team if y'all are not working together from the same sheet of music, right? So in order to sell your team, we got to have this harmonious balance that promotes all of these, pillars of empiricism, you know, the transparency, the collaboration, the openness, all of the values and the principles that we talked about over the course of this journey. You combine that with all of the stuff that you learned here and the stuff that you learned on your own, because I know you've learned on your own a whole lot more than you've learned from me, right? But you take all of that and you wrap it up, and fundamentally, we want to make sure that our team is what we're selling. Because our team, when we sell our team, we get more trust to get more work. When we get more work, that means we're creating more value. It means we're hopefully gaining more customers. We're saving more money. We're making more money. We're organizationally sound or more sound as a result of getting that work in. So when you're gaining the trust of the organization and you're gaining the trust of, you know, it, trusting in your team and in you as the product owner for that team, there's all kinds of opportunities at that point, opportunities for you to take advantage of, problems for your team to solve. And so what goes into selling your team? Part of it is a definition of done. Part of it is the collaboration and the transparency and the inspect and adapt. Part of it is your commitment to being a better product owner, being a better team. Part of that is roping your scrum master in and saying, hey, help us with some of these things. And I don't want necessarily the book answer all the time. I really want you to help us become more productive and more team-oriented and more collaborative and more transparent. Really want us to understand, visualizing the work that we have to do, limiting maybe the work in progress that we have, measuring the output of this stuff, and sending this stuff out to market, and then letting the customers tell us if they like it or they hate it, right? So getting engaged with that and making it a true team effort, that's the big catch. That's what a lot of product owners miss. I'll be honest, I've had teams where I wasn't able to create that bond with. You know, I've seen teams that don't have a bond at all because they have protected agendas somewhere. Because somebody's not promoting the teamwork. Somebody's not encouraging the teamwork. Somebody's not leading the drive towards becoming that team. And that's what we want to assimilate into. So you can't sell your team unless you're a good team. And it's like I tell my volleyball teams, you know, and you've heard this before if you're in athletics, because I coach a lot on the side. Y'all know that. You know, good teams are led by coaches, but elite teams are led by players. Well, the players on your team is your dev team, yourself, and your scrum master. So y'all got to be the ones driving this thing. Don't let an agile coach be the one pushing you to success. Don't let a podcast be the one pushing you to success. Not even me. All right? You got to take it on yourself. It's a team thing. Team wins, right? So sell your team. That's the big thing. All right? That's the number one thing that a successful product owner's got to do. But you can't sell your team unless you're able to sell your team. That makes sense to everybody, I hope. All right, so don't forget, today, go out to JestCoffeeTea.com. That's J-E-S-T, CoffeeTea.com. Product PO gets you 15% off for all your holiday gear and your ongoing coffee habit that you got, tea habits that you have. Try that Bali Blue, man. I'm telling you, it's going to knock your socks off. It's a deep, rich taste. It's great. Say hello to all of our friends. That's how you'll let them know that I sent you. Supporting listeners is great. You guys support me. I want to support you back. So until next time, and probably until 2023, have a safe and happy new year. Enjoy your holidays. And as always, a safe journey, my friends.